It's Wednesday, the 27th of January, 2016. Happy birthday to Johann Petro. Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au, and I'm 2NV1. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I just worked out what that username means. I'm 2NV1. I think I get it. Envy, maybe? Anyway, if you want to be like I'm 2NV1, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes, and you can become a sponsor of the podcast for a day. Also, of course, a big shout out to the guys over at Moneyball.com.au, Australia's and New Zealand's best daily fantasy sports site. We had a lot to talk about. We had a big chunk of games on Tuesday. We've got a big chunk of games on Wednesday. We're going to be doing all the talking, all the reviewing, all the previewing. So
let's get to it.
Now, today's title of the podcast, maybe it's a little bit obscure for you. If you're watching the video, you can probably tell who the monstrous line of the night's going to be. Maybe the title doesn't make sense. Maybe this would jog your mind, your memory.
Kevin!
Exactly. The reason I got that is my son has been watching a lot of Home Alone movies recently. So the Kevin clip of his mum, I was going to say that lady, his mum screaming Kevin, is always comes into my head. So that's what I went with today. It's a bit of a stretch, but anyway, Kevin Durant is the monstrous line of the night. As you can see, I've got my nice Kevin Durant jersey on. There it is. You can probably see that. And he was huge. Again, he's been fantastic. I don't think there's any way we can say anything else apart from that great that he's come back and he's unscathed from that foot injury. I was scared off from him. I only drafted him in one league, and that was a dynasty league. That hamstring issue worried me a bit at the start of the season, but everything's flying at the moment. 44 points, 14 boards, 5 assists, 4 triples, 1 steal. He went 12 of 26 from the field. He hit 16 of his 18 free throws, which is obviously a massive value as well. And Durant was, look, he's been huge this season. He's been a great option. He's the second ranked overall player in 8 category leagues for the season, averaging 27 and 8 with 4.5 assists, a steal, 1.2 blocks, 2.3 three-pointers. He's actually putting together numbers that are, aside from the scoring, probably better than his MVP season. His scoring is down 5 points there because Westbrook's getting a lot of that, but he's hitting the same amount of threes, growing more rebounds, slightly less assists, more blocks, and steals slightly less as well, and his efficiency is the same as always. He's been putting up some fantastic numbers, and Kevin Durant is solely and utterly back. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Archie Goodwin of the Phoenix Suns. He has to be owned everywhere. And I've said that a couple of times over the last week or so. Yeah, Brandon Knight's only going to miss, apparently, the next 2 to 3 games. I'm not convinced that's the case. I don't think Knight is getting shut down and we're never seeing him again this season. But I reckon this is going to linger and Knight is going to get, and once we head into February, we're going to see no more Brandon Knight. So even if we do see Brandon Knight come back, the last 4 or 5 games of Archie Goodwin and the next couple have been worth picking him up for. And I've picked him up and you should have picked him up as well. 26, 6 and 6 with a triple, 2 steals, only 29 minutes because he was dealing with really early foul trouble. He finished with 5 fouls, but that's still an incredible line. He has been absolutely fantastic. He is a top 20 player over his last 3 games, averaging 23, 3 and 4, 1.7 threes, 1.7 steals, a block on 50 and 79. His numbers have taken such a dramatic rise up lately. Now, he was a guy that I did have a lot of faith in probably last season, and I was hoping they would give him more of a role. Didn't like when they did trades to get guys who would play his position, like Reggie Bullock, and I think just give Archie Goodwin a go. I think he can do something. And he did show a little bit of something, I think, in the last game of last season. I might stand to be correct on that, but he had a decent game in one of those last couple of games, and then was buried again. But now, with Bledsoe gone, with Knight injured, he's putting up huge numbers and showing that, look, it's a bad team and they're not great, but he's showing that he can hang in the NBA, and it's something that I think maybe a lot of people doubted throughout the early parts of his career. He's looking fantastic. You have to own him for now. By this time next week, maybe it's not the case, but I do like what he's currently doing, and I do like his potential, because I'm not all that convinced we're going to see a huge amount more of Brandon Knight this season. the young gun of the night, Nerlens Noel of the Philadelphia 76ers. 30 minutes for Noel, 14-9, 3 steals, 3 blocks, 5 of 7 shooting, hit all of his free throws. You can't ask for much more than that. With Jahlil Okafor out, he has been basically that sort of top 30 guy that we saw last season. Forget about that. The last month, he's a top 15 player. And Okafor's played some of that, and Okafor hasn't played some of that. And you look at it, you get 11.5 points. Well, there's not much there, but 9 boards, 1.8 steals, 2.5 blocks, 63% from the field he's shooting over the last month. He was a liability from the field in his first 2 to 3 months in the NBA last year. He rounded it out with a 50% shooting run in the second half of the year. Ended his rookie season shooting 46. He's now at 52 for this year and, again, started slow and is at 63 now for the last month. His free throws are still a worry. He doesn't take many attempts. He's a 58% shooter over this last month, but he is just putting up incredible numbers. And if you grabbed him in the top 30, you were probably cursing yourself, or maybe you were cursing us at Basketball Monster for having him ranked, you know, highly coming into the season. But now I reckon you'd be pretty wrapped of the numbers you're getting. Those combination of defensive numbers, steals, blocks, field goal percentage, and rebounds, it's basically unmatched. He's doing it brilliantly. And yes, he plays better when Okafor's not there, but he's still putting up the numbers even when Okafor is playing. So Nerlens Noel with the young gun of the night. The dud of the night goes to Michael Carter-Williams. He played 38 minutes. That's a massive amount of time. 5 points, 2 rebounds, 5 assists, and 1 steal. So it's not a completely horrible line, but it's not ideal. Obviously, 2 of 8 shooting isn't great. You're still happy with the 5 assists. The 1 steal is nice, but clearly not a fantastic performance from Carter-Williams. He's been solid this season, though. He hasn't been spectacularly good. He's in that range, in that 50 to 75 range, which is probably where you could have drafted him. You may have even got him later. I think I got him in the 80s or 90s in one draft. And he's sitting there, again, not really contributing in points, but great rebounds, nice assists, big steal numbers, really good block numbers for a guard as well. Not completely humiliating your field goal percentage. He's at 45 on the season when he was a 40% guy for his first 2 years. Yeah, improved in that area. He's doing enough, and as good as Jared Bayless played, or as well as Jared Bayless played to start the season, I don't really see him taking this role off Carter-Williams as an ongoing sort of thing. Yeah, there'll be nights when Carter-Williams plays 25 minutes and Bayless plays 28 or something like that, but I don't see Carter-Williams losing this role anytime soon. It was good to see him playing 38 minutes, struggling, and Jason Kidd being the coach. So that was good, and he played alongside Bayless as well. He's just going to do what he does, and I think that's basically what you could hope for. You can't really hope for much more than that, can you? Let's look at the perfect DFS lineup for Tuesday. Bring that up on the screen. All right. Ooh, and there it goes. There we go. At point guard, Archie Goodwin at 42.2. That was almost a no-brainer to use him. Russell Westbrook at 55.6. We were talking yesterday, me and Seth, about the high-priced point guards that were on the board. Westbrook was the one that I was going for. Paul and Lillard were the other couple of options. Westbrook was fantastic against the Knicks. He put up 55.6. At shooting guard, Dwayne Wade with 50.8. Big night for him against a subpar Nets outfit. And Langston Galloway really took advantage of Carmelo Anthony's absence. He put up 36.5. He wasn't a guy that we mentioned yesterday when we talked about Mello being out. I will talk about that a little bit in a second, but he really thrived here. Small forwards, the big money guys, Paul George, 51.7, and KD had 66.3. And at power forward, Derek Williams, once again, Mello out, he really took advantage and put up huge numbers. 39 points for Derek Williams. He was a guy that I told you that you should look to target if Mello happens to be out. He was out. Williams responded. Beautiful. Serge Ibaka, 39.5, a pretty nice night from him, big minutes as well. And at center, Alex Len continues to roll. I can't be happier because I really love Alex Len. I think that he's going to be a tremendous player and a tremendous fantasy player. Not too many people agree with me, but I do think he's going to be great. And it's good to see him getting minutes over Markieff Morris and over Tyson Chandler. And I really like seeing the fact that him and Chandler playing together. It works because that was a real concern of mine heading into the offseason. Oh, damn it, they're ruining Alex Len's breakout season. This is going to be it. He's not going to be able to play with Chandler. Then I was trying to bargain with myself. Can he play with Chandler? Maybe he can, maybe he can't. Or maybe, probably not. But they're playing together. Len's dominating. He has to be owned in every league at the moment. And while his salary remains sub 5,000, he remains a really nice DFS play. All right, time for a quick break from one of our sponsors. SeatGeek is sponsoring the podcast again today, so thank you to SeatGeek, and thank you to all of you guys for helping to support the podcast by going and using the SeatGeek promo code. SeatGeek is the smart way to buy and sell tickets for live events. You can use it to find the best deals on tickets to NBA and NHL games, college basketball, concerts, and if your NFL team is still in the playoffs, you'll want to hear about SeatGeek's latest offer. SeatGeek is a lot like Kayak or Expedia, but it's for sports and concert tickets. It pulls all of the tickets available on other sites into one place to make comparison shopping easy. SeatGeek also grades every ticket from 0 to 100 based on value, so you can quickly find the best deal within your budget. Best of all, SeatGeek always shows you the full price of each ticket up front, which means no surprise fees. If you look at Super Bowl tickets on StubHub, they tack on hundreds, even thousands of dollars in fees at checkout, so don't be fooled. Use SeatGeek instead. We have a special Super Bowl offer. All of my listeners can get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase, but if you buy Super Bowl tickets on SeatGeek after entering promo code REDROCK, one word, SeatGeek will send you $100. That's right, $100 back if you use the promo code REDROCK on SeatGeek to buy Super Bowl tickets. So if you're in San Francisco area or you're traveling out there, $100 back is $100 back. You're going to be going to the game anyway, buy your tickets that way. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter that promo code REDROCK, which is one word. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase, or $100 if you use SeatGeek to buy Super Bowl tickets. Download the free SeatGeek app right now and enter the promo code REDROCK. And again, a big thanks to you guys who have done that. I do really appreciate it. It's great sort of bargaining power when I talk to companies and help to keep, you know, financing this podcast and help keeping it going, when we can show listener response from all of the Red Rock listeners, all of the team that helps this podcast be what it is. When you guys go out and support the advertisers, not necessarily even from necessarily buying things, like you're going to benefit from buying this sort of stuff, but just going in, downloading the app, putting that promo code in, you show them that, hey, we're aware of your product and it's a great idea to advertise on the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball podcast, because it works. So thank you to everyone who has gone and done that so far. All right, that is it's enough of that ad. Let's move in now to the games and look at these box scores in a little bit more detail. There we go, I've got that up on the screen for you all. The first game of the night, who was it? It was the Phoenix Suns and the Philadelphia 76ers. We'll do Suns first. Archie Goodwin talked about him. Alex Len briefly talked about him. 34 minutes for him, 16 and 12, one steal, two blocks, hit all of his free throws, 6 of 12 from the field. Much like Goodwin, he has to be earned. Len's probably got a more reliable chance of being valuable for the rest of the season. And I say that even though Jeff Hornacek is the coach. Tyson Chandler, just the 19 minutes, 5 and 5 with a block. Look, it might last 2 weeks of Len starting and playing minutes, because Hornacek is basically, you know, changing everything every 5 seconds anyway. But Len has been irrepressible in his last four games, putting up big, big numbers. Has to be earned until something changes. PJ Tucker, 33 minutes, 7 points on 1 of 8 shooting, which is bad, but 5 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, 1 triple. That's all really useful. I think that Tucker is a guy that you own as long as you're not counting on him for points, clearly. Sonny Weems with the unexpected 23-minute performance for 12 points, leave him out of it. And Devin Booker just wasn't getting his shot to fall. He still played 36 minutes, and that's still important. 12, 4, and 7, so chiming in with the assists. But when he goes 5 of 15 from the field and 1 of 2 from the free throw line, you don't feel great about it, because one of his biggest strengths is his percentages. Markieff Morris returned, 24 minutes off the bench, 8 and 7 with a steal. It doesn't look like that trade that was, you know, potentially going to happen with Houston when Corey Brewer became eligible to be traded is going to go down. So if you're owning him in a standard league and you're not sitting pretty at the top of a league, I reckon you can piss him off and move someone else in. If he's going to play this backup role, the 22 minutes, if he goes to a new team, yeah, fine, but it might be another month before that happens. And if you're in contention for the playoffs and you're battling for that spot, holding on to him is not going to work out for you. TJ Warren, 8, 3, and 2 in 22 minutes. He can be discarded in standard leagues as well. On the Sixers, Nick Stauskas played 38 minutes. He started in place of Isaiah Cannon, who was ruled out, and then he was ruled back in, and then he played, and then he sprained his ankle and lasted 10 minutes. So Stauskas played 38. He went 15, 4, and 4 with a steal and a 3. He's had a couple of decent games recently, but not enough for me to trust him and go, yeah, we make sure we're owning Nick Stauskas. Bob Cove, though, another big game, 19 and 5, 5 triples and assist, and some relatively solid shooting as well, 7 from 15. He's clearly a must-own guy. And Ish Smith had 20 points, 5 rebounds, 9 assists on some subpar shooting, which is exactly what you want from him. We don't want subpar shooting, but you should be prepared for it. Jeremy Grant started with Jahlil Okafor out. Triple one for Grant, 10, 3, and 5. Yeah, Okafor's going to miss the next game as well, so you can stream him in as a short-term ad, but apart from that, there's not much point in owning him long-term. And Hollis Thompson played 33 minutes with Isaiah Cannon struggling and Jakarr Sampson ill. Thompson had 13 points with 3 triples and 4 rebounds. He is just a deeper league guy only. The Clippers and the Pacers is the next game up. Chris Paul, 26, 6, and 7. 4 triples and a steal. Very, very efficient there. Look, with Blake, me and Seth were talking yesterday when the Blake Griffin news broke. Griffin is going to be out apparently 4 to 6 weeks. And then I saw quotes coming out from some surgeons saying they're dreaming if they think it's 4 to 6 weeks. So we could be seeing Griffin out for a long time. If you are in a spot where you're challenging for the playoffs and you don't have IR, you pretty much have to drop Griffin. And it's a pain in the ass. Maybe trade him and get something back from a top team. As much as you're strengthening a top team, you might want to look into it and get something. If you can get something that's significantly better than what you'd pick up off the waiver wire, do it. Or the other thing to look at is who's got the first waiver priority. Is it the teams that are around you? Is it a team that's well on the bottom? Is it a team well at the top? If it's a team that's around you, or if it's a team that's at the bottom, I'd be inclined to drop, because if a team at the bottom grabs him, it's not going to really impact you. If it's a team that's around you that grabs him, they're going to lose in the next 4 to 6 weeks. They're going to cop it, and that's going to improve your playoff chances. If it's a team up the top who's got the first waiver priority, they'll grab him, they'll sit on him, they'll love it. That's why you try to trade him to those guys. You trade Griffin to those people up the top, get something back, get their third worst, fourth worst player back off him, and get yourself something back. But if it's a team in the middle that's near you, and or a team at the bottom that's got the top waiver priorities, drop him, and it either won't impact you, or it will hurt your opposition. Bit of tactics involved there. I think that should, hopefully it doesn't always work, but it should work out that way. DeAndre Jordan played 41 minutes, 9 points only, but 19 boards and 3 blocks. He had a scarcity of blocks last week, so good to see him getting back into that. JJ Redick, 19, 2 and 2 with 4 triples. He'll continue to play a pretty big role with Griffin out. And we had the occasional Wes Johnson blow up. 15 points, 5 triples and a steal. He's not worth rostering in standard leagues, but he is a 14-team league sort of guy. Had a couple of people ask me who's going to benefit with Griffin out. Well, the answer is the same people who benefited while he was out with this quad issue. Basically no one. Players who were already owned, Redick, Jordan, and Paul. These other guys, Pierce, Marmute, Prigioni, Rivers, Wes Johnson, we're not owning them in 12-10 leagues. Nothing like that is going to change. It's going to be whatever's happened the last 4 weeks is likely continuing to happen for the Clippers. Paul George went for 31 and 11. He had 3 assists, a steal, and a block. A really nice night for him. Super efficient as well. And Miles Turner was limited to just 18 minutes, which I'm sure pisses off his owners and his DFS players, but he still had 16 and 6 with a block. Jan Mahinmi was back, straight back into 29 minutes, which is a little bit odd to me, because we're going to limit his minutes. We're going to play him in 6-minute bursts. Well, we're going to play him almost 30 minutes in total, which he hadn't even been getting before the injury. Turner, you still have to own him, but it's clear that with Mahinmi back, he is not going to be getting 30 minutes like he was before. Now, Lavoie Allen played 27 minutes here, which is probably something that shouldn't continue. He'll likely come back down to, say, 21, 22, maybe those extra 5-6 minutes, head on to Turner, and he gets 24, 25. I think that's probably a more common sense thing. And Mahinmi, you had to battle DeAndre Jordan, and not every team has a DeAndre Jordan, so I think it's unrealistic to think Mahinmi's going to get 29 minutes moving forward. I still think Mahinmi should be owned in most leagues, punt free throw build, and Turner should be owned in all leagues, whereas Allen and Jordan Hill, you leave those guys alone. George Hill was back starting. He played 40 minutes, had 15 points with a couple of assists and 3 triples. And Monte Ellis, not a good shooting night. 3 of 12 for 6 points, but 4 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals. Just sort of doing pretty much exactly what he needs to do. With George Hill back starting, Joe Young went back down to 2 minutes. So he's a very short-term value. He's is kaput. He's still a dynasty and keeper league. More a dynasty than keeper. And if you don't really know what the difference is when I say that, a keeper league is where you have a set amount of keepers. You might keep 3 players, 5 players, 6 players. Dynasty refers to leagues where you keep every single player. or you have the option of keeping every single player. That's the difference. So when I talk Dynasty, it's you have a roster and it's like an NBA roster. You keep every single player. You can choose to get rid of some. You might have contracts and salaries and all that sort of stuff. But a keeper league is like, you have three keepers and, you know, four keepers, five keepers, whatever it is. And it changes things because if I set a keeper league, you go, I'm in a keeper league. I've got three keeper spots. I'm picking up Joe Young. Well, that's not point. There's no point in that because he's not going to be one of your best three players. He's probably not going to be one of your best three value players either. But if you're in a deep dynasty league where you keep everyone and there's just nothing available on the waiver wire, you try and acquire a guy who in 2 years is going to become maybe a top 100 sort of top 70 sort of player. That's the difference. Whereas, you know, in a three keeper league, a five keeper league, Joe Young may never be valuable enough to be a keeper. It's a subtle difference, but it's important, especially with the way that I talk about these things. The next game, the Washington Wizards and the Toronto Raptors. Surprisingly enough, the Wizards couldn't get past the Raptors again. They just cannot beat them in the regular season. Playoffs, clearly a different story last season. Otto Porter, back in business, 36 minutes, 15 and 8, 4 steals and a 3. I'm sure he's owned everywhere. If not, you know he has to be. Marcin Gortat, only the 9 points. He backed it up with 8 rebounds, 2 steals, and 2 blocks, so not a completely disappointing night. While Johnny Wall went 18, 2, and 14 with a triple on some not nice shooting, 6 of 17 in 36 minutes. With Brad Beal out with that concussion, Garrett Temple played 34 minutes, and he's just no good. 8 points, 2 threes, and 1 rebound. I'm not adding him. He's not a 12-team league guy to me. Gary Neal had 14 points in 22 minutes. Ramon Sessions went 7, 3, and 2 in 15 minutes. And Jared Dudley, back on the bench, played 20 minutes. He's going to sort of go up and down depending on the teams they play and the role he's going to have. There's no point owning him in a 10 or 12 team league. 14 team league, you're pushing it. Nene got the start, and he was all right. 10 and 2 with a steal and a block. He's not for everyone, but he can be owned. And as I've said that a million times as well, it's very short term with Nene. The Raptors' Kyle Lowry was great, 29-4-4, 5 triples, 2 steals, left the game with a wrist injury at the end, didn't return, had an x-ray, or was it an MRI, whatever, it was one of those two things. Came back negative, so let's hope that he's all good. It appears he will be. He was fantastic. And Jonas Valanciunas only played 26 minutes. There was foul trouble involved, and it was a smashing as well. 13-12 for Valanciunas and a block, while DeMar DeRozan went 17-4-4. Terrence Ross, his second big game in a row, 15-2, 3 triples, 31 minutes is the key thing here, with Corey Joseph playing 25 and James Johnson playing 15. If you're desperate for scoring, steals, and threes, you can add Ross in a 12-team league. By no means should you be, you know, falling all over yourself to go and get him and thinking he's going to be the guy who changes everything. Short term, yeah, why not? Give it a go and see how it pans out. If Lowry was to miss any time, Corey Joseph would be a guy to add here, 10-2-6 in 25 minutes here, but if not, there's no place for him in a standard league. Pat had 24 minutes, 2 points and 8 boards, while Luis Scola went 8-8 in his 23 minutes. Both these guys just cannibalize each other's value, and occasionally one will go big, the other one will go big the next game. Unreliable, not worth it for 12-team formats. The Oklahoma City Thunder, Russ Westbrook, 30 points, 8 rebounds, 10 assists, 3 steals. Huge, huge night from Russ, going 13 of 24 from the field. Him and Durant were fantastic. It was an overtime game, so they all played some extra minutes. Serge Ibaka played the most, though. 47 for him, 12 and 17, 2 assists and 2 blocks. A really nice game from him, really. Not a good shooting game, but everything else, the 17 boards, has to be a season high for him. He is what he is at this point. Steven Adams returned, played 35 minutes, 9-8 with 3 steals in his big role, while Enes Kanter was limited to just 18, going 2-7. The same story with Kanter. You drop him after this, he'll have a big game in the next one, add him, whatever. And Steven Adams is definitely a 14-team league guy, and he can be owned in some 12-teamers if you're going big and if you're ready to punt percentages. With Andre Robertson out, Deion Waiters played 43 minutes. He also wasn't good in 43 minutes. 14-3, 2 threes and an assist, even though he shot 6 of 10 from the field, which is very un-Deion Waiters-y. He's still more of a deeper, you know, 170-player roster sort of league. I can sort of look at him in a 12-team league if you're just desperate for some points. He can be a source of assists at times, but with Westbrook there and campaign handling the ball, not sure how much of an opportunity he's going to get to get those sort of numbers. Payne played 15 minutes, had 4 triples for his 12 points, so a really nice outing from him, but he's nowhere near standard league discussion at the moment. On the Knicks, The three guys who really picked up the slack with Mallow out, Langston Galloway, Derek Williams, and Lance Thomas, are all massive. Galloway went 21-5-3 with 3 steals and 4 triples. Derek Williams went 19-10 with 2 threes and 4 assists. And Lance Thomas had a triple one along with 16 points. That's great. And they're going to be really nice if Mallow misses more time. But there's other factors involved here. Jose Calderon played just 21 minutes. Robin Lopez played just 22 minutes. Probably inexcusably to me that he played so few minutes. And the fact that Mallow was out, these guys got extra run. Williams is the guy that is probably he's the most consistent at the moment, even in a bench role for 14-team leagues. Thomas and Galloway's a 14-team leaguer. Thomas is probably a back-end 14-team league guy. But if Mallow happens to be out for any length of time, then you can potentially add him in 12-team leagues. I'm not rushing to do it. Kristaps.
Percentages.
Played 31 minutes, 15-5, 2 triples, 1 steal, 2 blocks, including some great highlight plays. It's basically what he does every game. It appears just some sort of highlight. He's pretty solid. He's pretty steady. He's going to be a top 50 player this year. And Jerian Grant had a nice line. 7 points, but 6 assists and 2 steals in his 21 minutes with Jose Calderon limited. And he'll have the flashes as well. And he could be a starting point guard by the end of the season. It's just not happening anytime soon, so there's no stash potential there. Aaron Aflalo was terrible. 6 of 21. He did have 17 points. He did also hoist up the potential game-winning shot, which missed because he's Aaron Aflalo. 17 points, 1 3, 5 rebounds, 2 assists. I hate seeing him get 40 minutes, but really there's no one else who should be getting the minutes over him on this team. You can make a case for Galloway, but Galloway is not great either. But I hate seeing him take these last-second shots. That really pisses me off. Because let Porzingis run it. Get it to Porzingis. It's pretty straightforward. Get it to your best player. And your best player with Mallow out is not a Aflalo. It's so far from being a Aflalo. It's not even funny. The Miami Heat and the Brooklyn Nets. Dwayne Wade, big night from Wade against the Nets. 27-4-8, 3 steals, 2 blocks. Wing players, point guards against the Nets, load up on them. They're going to put up big numbers. Even Justice Winslow put up fantasy stats. He played 37 minutes and went 13-7 with 2 assists, 2 steals, and a 3-pointer, and hit 6 of his 7 shots. That'll probably be a high watermark for him this season. And Chris Bosh just continued being excellent, 27-5-4. Beno Udrih returned. He played 30 minutes with Goran Dragic still on the shelf, 9-5-4 for Udrih, and Tyler Johnson went back to 18 minutes off the bench, 4-2-2. Dragic is probably going to play the Heat's next game, so there's no value in Udrih or Johnson for standard leagues. And probably Johnson has fallen out of favor for 14-team leagues with the way that he's played. Gerald Green only played 16 minutes in this one as well, 6 points and 2 assists, while Luol Deng went 10-2-4 in his 31 minutes. No Hassan Whiteside, so Amari Stoudemire started. He played 22 minutes for 4-7 with 2 steals, and he just doesn't have the energy left or the gas left in the tank to really to play starters minutes and be a viable fantasy player. Joe Johnson is, for real, I don't know if for real is the right word, but he has to be owned. 37 minutes, 15-4-8, 2 triples. His play has improved, I'd say, 400% since Jarrett Jack has gone down, and there's lots of factors for that. I think it's just the way that the team's being run, the lower usage point guards that are in there. He can handle the ball. He's 8 assists here. He can do that. And it's working out for him. Also worked out for Andrea Bargnani, who scored 20 points in 24 minutes. I own him in a 30-team league, and that's probably as deep as you need to go to get him. Brook Lopez, 31 minutes, 13-10 with a block. Just a so-so night for him. And this was the first night that Shane Larkin did play more than Donald Sloan. 25 minutes for Larkin, 7-3-6 with 2 steals. Look, he loves 6 assists, he loves 2 steals, and he's not going to give you anything else than that. While Sloan played 23 and went 10-2-2 with 2 triples. I'm not going and adding Larkin. I'm not swapping Sloan for Larkin. I'd hold Sloan for one more game, but he's not a must-hold guy if there's someone else out there that you want. This is how they're going to run it. They're going to split the minutes. Larkin still is the better player. I'll maintain that. Sloan is terrible. Larkin doesn't offer much offensively, but you pair him with Joe Johnson, and he can play defense. He can distribute the ball a little bit. He's not great, to be honest. He's not good, but he's a fair margin better than what Donald Sloan is, but I reckon you can be fairly confident in leaving both of them on the wire in standard leagues. Wayne Ellington had 8 points in 30 minutes, and Bojan Bogdanovic went 11 with 3 triples in his 23 minutes, while Thad Young struggled, going 12-5 in 32 minutes. The Orlando Magic and the Milwaukee Bucks. Big win for the Bucks. Yeah, the Magic, Victor Oladipo bounced back after a subpar performance. 18-3-5, two threes, a steal, and really good from the line as well. 10 of 11. Good to see that was just a bit of a blip. And Nikola Vucevic's run of blocks continues. Another two in this one. He went 16-12. And for a guy who was, you know, that's his downfall. Hey, you're punting blocks. He's a great center to grab. His last 2 weeks have yielded 2.5 blocks per game. He's already up. Like last year, he was a 0.7 blocks guy. He's already for the season at 1.1, and he's kicking it up another gear at the moment. The thing that's holding him back, you know, over the last couple of weeks has been his field goal percentage, but he should be, you know, be able. He's currently ranked 30th. He should be able to be a top 30 player by the end of the season, especially if there's a way that he's able to keep his block numbers at this, you know, much elevated rate. His free throws are great. His field goal percentage is normally great. He's a big points and rebounds guy. He's almost at a steal a game. He's over a block a game. Definitely things improving defensively for Nick Vucevic. Lord Alfred Payton, he struggled in this one. 8 points with three assists, and he split the point guard minutes with Shabazz Napier, who also played 24. He's terrible, Shabazz Napier. 3-2-3 with three steals. He can be left alone. And Evan Fournier, just the 25 minutes, but still productive. 15 points, four triples, two assists. Talked about him yesterday. He should still be owned. Big minutes for Aaron Gordon, so that's fantastic. 37. Production, not so much. 9-9, 1-3, 3 assists, 1 steal. Should be owned in basically all leagues. And Toby Harris had a bit of a stinker, going 13-6 with 2 triples, a steal, and a block. But he let you down with his shooting, going 4 of 12 from the field, and he went 3 of 7 from the free throw line. It was a bit Scott Skilesy this game. 24 minutes to Payton, 24 minutes to Toby Harris, 25 to Fournier as he gave some extra run to Mario Hezonja, the 24 minutes to Shabazz Napier, which is silly. But a bit Skilesy, and they lost. So again, when Skiles does something wrong and they lose, I do enjoy it. For the Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo went 25-9, two steals and a block on just super efficient shooting, 12 of 16, while Chris Middleton went 25-5-7 with two triples in 36 minutes. And just quietly, how good is Chris Middleton? I had him, I'd left him off my All-Star team just. He was in my honorable mentions, but seriously, he is seriously good. His last month, he is averaging 23 points, two triples, four rebounds, five assists, one steal, shooting 49-89. It doesn't get much better than those sort of numbers for fantasy and in real life. He is legitimately, if he wasn't playing for Milwaukee, he would be a star. If he was in New York doing this, everyone would be loving him. He is legitimately turning into a star, and he's closing in on being potentially the best player on this team, which the team with Greg Monroe and Giannis Antetokounmpo is a little bit strange, but he has just been incredible. Jabari Parker went 15-7 with a block, while Greg Monroe had his nice 20-10 game, 21-11, and absent the defensive numbers. Four blocks again for John Henson in 17 minutes, and that's exactly what he is, a blocks guy. And Jared Bayless played 30, 12-5-1 with three threes, and he's not a standard league guy. The Sacramento Kings, fresh off that double overtime victory, loss against the Charlotte Hornets. They got smashed by the Blazers, which was always on the cards. Willie Cauley-Stein still played 30 minutes though. 12-7, one steal, four blocks, own him. Rajon Rondo, 15-5-11. Yep, we know what we're doing with Rajon Rondo. And DeMarcus Cousins, after a huge, huge night, just destroyed your percentages. 4 of 21, that's disgusting. 9 of 17 from the free throw line. Absolutely horrible. 17-5-4 is passable, but no threes, no steals, no blocks. But those percentages, oh, yuck. After just tearing things apart over the last couple of games, not a good night from Boogie. The minutes were suppressed for a lot of players here. Omri Caspi played 24, Darren Collison 21, as they gave extra run to James Anderson, who's 18 minutes. He's not the human victory cigar, James Anderson. He's the human white flag. We give up. We're putting James Anderson out there. Nothing really to see too much of this, except just another reminder. Make sure you own Willie Cauley-Stein, please. The Blazers, well, they spread their minutes all over the place as well. The only player over 30 was Dame Lillard, who played 33. He went 15-5-13, and CJ McCollum had 18 points with 5 assists. The front court, as per usual, spread out, but a lot of production. 12-8 from Plumlee with 2 blocks. Myers Leonard hit 3 threes for 9 points with 7 rebounds, some decent numbers from him. Noah Vonleh went 10-7 with 2 blocks in his 23 minutes, and Ed Davis had 11 with a steal and a block. So all nice numbers. Plumlee and Leonard are probably the two 12-team league guys. Leonard borderline. but you can make a case for all of them in 14 team leagues, even though Vonleh is creeping into that category. El-Farouq Aminu, not a great night, and he has been a real disappointment lately. He had a triple one, 7 points and 4 rebounds to go along with that, but his form of late hasn't been fantastic. He's still, because he's able to contribute in the steals and blocks categories, he still has value, but his last 2 weeks, he's giving you 7.7 points. It's still a three, still a steal, still 1.6 blocks, but you do need to be able to absorb, you know, the crappiness in his field goal percentage and in his scoring. A bit of a disappointment with what he's been able to do this year. Definitely hasn't been rebounding as well as I would have hoped he would have. He was a guy that he's still getting 8 rebounds per 36, but his last 3 seasons, he was at 9, 8.7, and 10.2. So a bit of a drop-off in the rebounding stakes for El-Farouq Aminu this season. The last game of the night was the Dallas Mavericks and the Los Angeles Lakers. Dirk won the game for the Mavericks with a game-winning shot. Chandler Parsons' hot form continued. 35 minutes, 17, 9, and 4, and 2 triples. And JJ Barea got red-hot off the bench. 18, 4, and 4 with a steal. If you had him in DFS, he would have been pretty pleased. I think I mentioned him as a punt tournament play. Don't really know why I was keen on him, but it worked out all right. With Devin Harris out, he got the big minutes, and Ray Felton played 27. He went 7-2-2. Darren Williams was all right, 11 points with 4 assists, not a great night. And Salah Mejri, he started in place of Zaza Pachulia, only 23 minutes, 9-4, which is still not terrible, but not as explosive as he had been in the other starts that he's got. Wes Matthews, 9-5 in 33 minutes, and Dirk had 13-6. Back to Mejri, Zaza might miss another game. There's no real standard league relevance for him at this point. On to the Lakers. Good old Byron Scott, 25 minutes for D'Angelo Russell, and some ludicrous quotes. I've tweeted them out onto my timeline. I should have a look at them and read them out. Byron said he sat D'Angelo in the final moments because he thought he was trying to take over the game. Yeah, you wouldn't want a rookie getting confidence and thinking that he can do things and put up numbers. Hey, who else on your team, Byron, is you should be taking over the game, especially when Kobe's out. Surely having a rookie stand up and do that can't be a bad thing. Here's another quote. Byron believes D'Angelo is pretty close toward having too much cockiness. Feels too easy to make a joke about that. I haven't really crafted a great one. But if there's anyone who's got too much cockiness, it's the guy who's the massive cockhead, and that is the coach. Who is this guy? He has to be a written character. He is getting fed lines of what to say and what to do. He can't be this negligent, inept, ludicrous, offensive, demeaning, wrong. I don't understand, because you can say he's in there and he's tanking. Play the young kids. Do you think that they're going to go out there and get you in the playoffs? Do you think that a team run by D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle is going to get you into the playoffs? you're dreaming if that's the case. Play him. He makes very, very little sense. Very, very little sense. As for the rest of the Lakers, 36 minutes to Lou Williams, 14-4 with 3 blocks out of nowhere. He should be owned. A 31-minute performance from Julius Randle gave him 16-11 with a couple of blocks. Again, much like Lou Williams, savor those blocks from Julius Randle. Larry Nance was back. He played 23 minutes off the bench, and Brandon Bass played 14. I think we'll struggle to see Randle getting 31 minutes again with Nance back in the lineup. He could, but I'm not confident that it'll happen. He's not a must-own player to me, Randle. Nance isn't either, but they're both borderline 12-team league guys. Jordan Clarkson, 18, 6, and 7, a really nice night from him. And Roy Hibbert had probably his best game of the season, 11, 3, and 3 with 2 blocks in just 21 minutes, but let's leave him alone for deeper leagues. With Kobe out, Anthony Brown got a start, 21 minutes for 3 points. There's not a lot to be too excited about. I do like Anthony Brown, but for a fantasy point of view, there's not a lot to get too excited about with him at the moment. All right, before we head into the DFS preview portion of the show, going to take a quick break from a word from our sponsors, and then I'm going to answer a Dynasty question that I didn't get to yesterday. All right, the Dynasty question comes from, I had a couple. One of them I'm going to save for a special Dynasty Roundtable podcast that myself, Kyle McEwen, and Matt Smith are going to have around the All-Star break. We're going to do a show solely devoted to Dynasty League, so make sure you get any questions sorted out for those, in addition to the Dynasty Corner that we have each week on the show. The first one comes, well, not the first one, we're doing one question here. Dynasty Corner from Iron Man at Starks_industry. His question is, Miles Turner, what's the next 2 to 3 year projections you guys have for him? I think he's going to be really good. I think he's going to be a super fantasy player. He can score. He can rebound. He blocks shots at a huge rate. He can hit threes, which we haven't seen yet. He hits his free throws, which again, we haven't seen yet in the NBA. He can be a high field goal percentage guy. I think that he has got tremendous, tremendous upside, assuming he can stay healthy, which was a concern of his heading into the draft. Now, he had the fractured thumb, which is not the issue that he was dealing with prior to the draft. He was dealing with hip and gait issues. Hopefully, he had surgery, so hopefully they were able to fix that. But that's the only concern with him. He has got legitimate, I'm going to say like Serge Ibaka type upside. Hits threes, block shots, and you know, good in both your percentages. I think that he can be that guy who probably will never be a top 10 player. It will sort of sit between the 50s and 30s in about 3 years' time. I reckon that next year we'll see him as a top 100 player pretty comfortably. And after that, I reckon we're seeing him as a top 50 player, maybe top 60 player. But he can do so, so much. He's got no real deficiencies. Like, his passing is probably a deficiency, but you're not expecting too much of that out of your big men. But points, boards, threes, steals to a degree, blocks, and both percentages are things that are definitely working in Miles Turner's favor. We talked about him a little bit earlier this season with the return of Mahinmi coming back, limited him to less than 20 minutes in today's game. I'm still holding on to him in standard leagues, but his dynasty value is it's pretty high. Don't forget, we are going to be doing that dynasty roundtable. Myself, Kyle, and Matt will be doing that around that All-Star break time. There'll also be a trade deadline podcast at that time as well, and I'm still working out what else we're going to do throughout that time. There probably won't be a podcast every single day. I'll try to, but there'll be definitely stuff happening that won't be this, you know, clearly this breakdown sort of format. All right, we are going to have a quick break, not from our sponsors, so I can grab a drink, and then we're going to be back to transition into DFS stuff for tomorrow. I saw your picture today. Got me thinking about the things that I would say. But I know you're happy now in your someplace far away. Away, away, away. And I can't remember the way you taste, you taste, you taste. I walk down your old street, and I'm wondering if we'll ever meet again. Without a second glance, you turned your back, my friend. This is the end, the end, the end. And I can't pretend I'm ready to be your friend. So don't go, don't you know my face? I'm the one that made your heart break so, so long ago. And don't go. We are back. We're going to be looking at the DFS action for Wednesdays. You know, when I say tomorrow and today, I know it confuses a lot of you people who win the States. Just ignore me. I'm talking from the future to you guys, obviously. And when I say today and tomorrow, I'm previewing Wednesday's games. Wednesday the 27th of January. That's the games. I always have to look at these dates and work it out. Wednesday the 27th of January. These are the games that we are previewing. The first one is the Phoenix Suns and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs are favored by a whopping 16.5 points. The total is 210.5. John Lua is currently questionable for the Suns. He's dealing with his back spasms, obviously. His return, you know, could potentially impact Alex Len. It's going to impact Markieff Morris a little bit as well. If we hear that Lua is out, $4,700 for Alex Len is super appealing. He's been amazing, averaging 34.5 points across his last three games in 35 minutes. And at 4,700, that's smashing value. Another 35 today. But the risk is that Hornacek does a Hornacek and makes the wrong move and limits him to get John Lua back into the rotation. When, let's be honest, Lua is not the player that what Alex Len is. It becomes more of a cash game just with that risk associated, more of a GPP guy. And someone was asking me what the difference is between GPP and cash games in terms of when I talk about players. When you're looking for a cash game player, you want a consistent player. You want someone who's going to be consistent and who's got a really high floor and is not going to be subject to wild variance. When you're looking at a GPP player, you're expecting boom or bust. This guy can go for 40, or he's also a chance to go for 5. So someone in maybe a volatile sort of situation with a coach who's not giving consistent roles, whose play is inconsistent. Damian Lillard was a good example yesterday. He's been up and down. He plays well in some matches, like destroyed the Lakers. Against the Sixers, he was terrible. Today against the Kings, he was okay. He was average. It's these guys who are up and down become better GPP guys, because to cash in a GPP, you need a higher score. So you need everything to go right. You need to take some risk on some guys. Cash games, less risks, more consistency, more solid value. So if Lua's out, I like Len for both. If Lua plays, Len becomes more of a GPP sort of guy. Archie Goodwin, I reckon you can use in both. He's at 4,100. He put up 42 today, 35 average across his last three. No one's challenging him for the point guard minutes while Brandon Knight's out. So both of those guys are a pretty nice value from the Suns side of things. 4,500 from Devin Booker. Even the games he's struggled, he still put up 27.3 today and wasn't his greatest night. He's still averaging 26 across the last three. And at 4,500, that's basically right on value. I think he is a relatively solid cash game play as well. PJ Tucker, not a great matchup for him, but at 4,500, he's definitely in play for GPP. Now I'm getting myself confused. On the Cavs side of things, Tristan Thompson back as a starter, played 34 minutes in the last one. 4,600 is his salary. He put up 36 points. I'm probably not expecting another 36 here, but 27 points is definitely in play. I reckon he's not a bad cash and tournament option. Kevin Love at 7,000. He just hasn't been getting it done lately, but the matchup is appealing for him. He is a nice tournament option. That's probably where he sits for me. And Kyrie Irving, I just don't want to use Kyrie because this game could be over really quickly, and the Cavs, if it's over, they're going to limit him. Love, on the other hand, in the games that haven't been close, they've still been playing him 33 minutes. So I'm confident with him getting more minutes. This game isn't close, then Irving's going to play 25, 26 minutes, and that's going to be an issue for him. I've limited, when looking at the projections on Basketball Monster, I've dropped Irving down a couple of minutes from his usual amount, same as LeBron, because they've shown so far that in blowouts, they'll sit a little bit, and they'll take it easy, a bit more than what Kevin Love does. LeBron's at 9,900, and you love the matchup. The minutes do worry you. It's a little bit hard to play him in a cash game because of that. But he is still averaging 50 points across the last three. I just fear that this one might be like a 35, a 36, which is not a great return when you're spending $10,000 on him. I do like J.R. Smith, though, at 5,000. He feels a little matchup proof. He's got a great matchup here. He can get hot, give you 27, give you 30 points, and you're done, and you've got nice numbers out of that. Matthew Dellavedova at 4,200 is a tournament option. A super matchup. He was great in the Australia Day matchup for the Cavs. He could get some extra run if Kyrie is limited by the flow of the game. And if he gets minutes, he can hit a few threes. He can get some assists, and he can return value at only 4,200. Markieff Morris, I'd leave alone. Tyson Chandler, maybe, but the matchup doesn't suit him. We only got 19 minutes today. Probably leave him out of it. Mozgov out of it as well. Mirza Teletovic, TJ Warren on the Suns. I don't think they're... You maybe throw TJ Warren into a tournament, but that's probably about it. The Denver Nuggets and the Boston Celtics. The Celtics are favored by 8.5 points. The total is 209.5. Jameer Nelson is currently questionable for the Denver Nuggets. On the Celtics side of things, Kelly Olynyk at 4,800. He's a great definition of a tournament play. We know that he can get Brad Stevens pretty often, but he can go for 45, 50 points even if he gets hot. Not trusting him in cash. And I'll put the same sort of caveat on Jared Sullinger as well, who looks appealing also. But at 5,600, what's Brad Stevens going to do? Is he going to play him 16 minutes like the last game? Or is he going to play him 30 minutes like he did a few games ago when he put up 47? I think they probably sit around that 22, 23 mark, and that does limit them, but they're not bad tournament options. other Celtics guys. Amir Johnson, I'm not using him at 4,900 despite the positive matchup that he has here. Jay Crowder looks to bounce back. He's been subpar his last three, averaging just 22 points, and he's at 6,400, so you want him to go for over 30. I love the matchup, but I don't think that him going over 30 is something I'm all that really keen on putting money on. On the Nuggets side of things, Danilo Gallinari at 6,900. Just hasn't been able to return that sort of value lately, so I'm not sure that's a great matchup. Emmanuel Mudiay, forget about it, at 5,100 against the Celtics backcourt, not for me. And Will Barton at 6,200. If you're using him, it's strictly for a tournament. Celtics defense, given his sort of flaky play of late, averaging just under 24 in his last five. He did have a big one in the last one, but he's just as liable to go and play 19 minutes in the next game and put up 12 points. And against the Celtics, not for me. Ken Faried is still laboring with that groin issue, so I'm not going to be running him out there. He's at 6,100. Nikola Jokic at 5,300. The salary's come up. His production's been out of control good. Yusuf Nurkic, Mike Malone keeps saying he's out of shape. If you watch him, he just looks fat, Nurkic. He looks so fat, and that's fair enough. He's been so much time out of the game. It's probably not fair enough that he's fat, but he hasn't played for so long. He hasn't been able to run for a very long time, then came back and was out again. Jokic, I like him. Even in 20 minutes, I like him at 5,300. Not all that keen on him in a cash sort of setting, but in a tournament, I think he's a pretty nice center to own at 5,300. 5,500 for Avery Bradley is getting a little bit on the high side for me. 4,700 for Gary Harris. I'd like it if it was a bit less, but he does feel like a pretty solid cash game option. He's giving you almost 23 each night, but the Boston matchup makes me a little bit sour on him. And Isaiah Thomas at 8,300. Great matchup. Put up big numbers in the last one. Can he get to 40? If you think he can get to 40, it's a good play. I think he's a pretty decent chance to get to 40 here, to be honest. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Detroit Pistons. Meant to give a stat about Philadelphia before, but I'll do it now. In their last three games, the Philadelphia 76ers are 3-2. Don't hear much chatter about them being a disgrace, being the worst team ever, being an affront to basketball, that the league needs to do something. You don't hear much of that chatter anymore because they're better. I was about to say they're good, but they're not good. But they're better. 3-2 in the last five games. Yes, they started off horribly, but they're a lot better. Isaiah Cannon is questionable with his wrist and ankle, and Jakar Sampson, who missed today's game with that illness, is also questionable. On the Detroit side of things, Marcus Morris has a really tasty matchup. He's at 5,100. He's barely reached value at all over the last few games. He's only averaging 18 across his last three. His ownership will be low. I don't mind him as a cash game play, even with the way he's been playing, because it is the Sixers, and he's a really nice tournament option. Andre Drummond is 82, and you look at that and go, well, that's appealing. He was at 10,000 at one point. It's dropped down, but I'm concerned. The matchup's good, but what are his minutes going to be like? He's only averaging 28 across the last three, and he's giving you 28 points. Do you think he can get back to 40? I'm not convinced, to be honest. I'm not all that happy with it. Ersan Ilyasova at 5,700, I like his matchup, and I think at 5,700 he can give you 25, 27, 28 points pretty comfortably. In fact, he's averaging 27 across his last five, and he has had a 38-point game in there. The Sixers' defense doesn't really concern me too much with him, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope makes a great tournament play. He's at 5,800. He can go off and get hot and give you 35 points, and that's what you're looking for in a cash game situation. Reggie Jackson at 7,000, really smashed value in the last game, but prior to that hadn't been. I think he's a decent guy to look at, but I prefer his opposite number, Ish Smith, who's at 6,900. It's $100 less than what Reggie Jackson is, but he's outplaying him. He's averaging four more points over the last five games, with Smith at 32 and Jackson at 28. The salary is getting up there for Smith, making it a little bit harder to play him, and this isn't a great matchup, so I reckon you can probably find other point guards out there who might be more appealing, but Smith is not a terrible option. Robert Covington's at 5,100. The matchup's terrible. The Pistons just really shut down opposition small forwards. But at his salary, for him to get 25 points, I'm relatively confident that he's going to be able to do it. So he's a fairly consistent cash game option for me at the moment. With no Jahlil Okafor, Nerlens Noel at 6,400 definitely comes into play. He put up 36 today. You'd expect him to go for over 30 in this one at 6,400. I reckon 35 is definitely within reach for Nerlens as well. And Jeremy Grant becomes a nice tournament option at 4,200. Not his best game today, but he can go for 30, 35 when given an opportunity. So he's someone to pay attention to. Another guy that's a bit sneaky, 3,900 for Aaron Baines. If Drummond gets limited and they go real hacker early and he plays 22, 23 minutes. Baines will get 24 minutes and he'll put up over 20 points. He's averaging 19.7 in the last three games in just 20 minutes. So he's basically a fantasy point per minute sort of guy. Give him 24 minutes. He gets 24 fantasy points at less than 4,000. That could be a win for you. It's not a cash game option, but it's something in a tournament that might be able to, you know, sneak you in there and get you that 6 or 7X value from a sub 4,000 player. The next game to look at is the Los Angeles Clippers and the Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks are favored by 3.5. The total is 207.5 points. No injuries to really mention in this game. Kent Bazemore at 5,200. He's been okay, like averaging 23 across the last three. That's all right, but to be honest, there's not a huge amount in this game, especially from the cheaper guys, that really stands out. We talk about some expensive players. I like Paul Millsap at 8,900. The Clippers matchup is not great, but I reckon he can still push through and get 40 points at 8,900 and be a pretty nice expensive player. And on the other side of things, DeAndre Jordan's at 7,800. I'd rather spend the 7,800 on DeAndre Jordan. He has been a lot more than what I would have to spend on Andre Drummond, who we just talked about. He's been a lot more consistent lately. You should be out, you know, feel pretty confident you're going to get 35 fantasy points from him most nights, and he's definitely got a 40-point upside, which he basically put up in the last game. JJ Redick at 5,200 is a classic tournament play. He's only averaging 18 in the last three, but he can get hot and drop a 40, and this is not a difficult matchup defense-wise for him, so he's worth a look. Kyle Korver at 4,000, probably not getting it done at the moment. Jeff Teague at 5,500, he was good in the last game, but this is not the matchup that you want to get Jeff Teague involved in. Chris Paul, he's at 10,100, the matchup really suits him. He was good today, but only put up 41.7, and at 10,000, that's not quite cutting it. I'm not expecting him to be able to get 50 in this one, so therefore I'll probably go in another direction at point guard. And that other direction probably won't involve Dennis Schroeder, given the fact that he'll have to match up against Chris Paul. And even when Chris Paul goes off, Pablo Prigioni comes on, and he's a pretty good defender. The Spurs and the Rockets. You reckon the Spurs are going to be pissed? Tim Duncan is out of this one, so we're going to see David West most likely starting again. James Harden has been on fire, but you know what's a great way to put out a fire? With Kawhi Leonard. Harden's averaging 57 points in his last three games. He's priced at 10,600. I am not spending 10,600 on James Harden when Kawhi or Danny Green is going to be out there shutting him down. The value in this one comes from Josh Smith, who's at 4,000. Wasn't a great game from him in the last one, but he's got nice tournament upside at 4,000. I like David West at 4,500, who'll be starting with Tim Duncan out. He's got the opportunity to go for 25 or 26 points. And I actually don't mind Kawhi at 7,500. The matchup, the Rockets boost for him is brilliant. I've got him projected at 30 minutes, which is not a huge amount. I think that he can easily go for 35 or 36 here. This should be a nice spot for Kawhi. And remember, the Rockets beat the Spurs on Christmas. So keep that in mind, that maybe Kawhi plays 33, 34 minutes and has a bigger role. DeMarcus Cousins, no, wrong guy. LaMarcus Aldridge is really struggling. He's at 6,600. I don't even want to spend that on him, despite the Rockets bump, which is really appealing. But he's had the back problem. He's had playing shit problems. He's not someone that I want to really look at. John Simmons at 3,500. If you think this game's going to be a blowout, Simmons is maybe someone to throw into a tournament. I don't think his upside's all that high, though, for me to really spend much on him. And Boris Diaw's at 3,700. Look, didn't do much in his last few games, but he can go for 25. He can go for 28 points, and that's worth having a look at sub 4,000. I'll leave Tony Parker alone with Patrick Beverley on him. That's not a nice matchup. Danny Green, forget about it. And Dwight Howard at 8,300. Don't know if he's even playing at this point. And if Howard plays, it does limit Smith, I think. We're not using Capella. We're not using Terrence Jones. If Howard doesn't play, Trevor Ariza's been fantastic playing the four. It's not a good matchup for him, but he's only at 5,900. He is averaging 39 across the last three. And at 5,900, there's enough value there that I could see using him if Howard is out. If Howard plays, I'll probably be leaving Trevor Ariza alone. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Thunder are favored by 8. The total is 210.5 points. Kevin Martin is out. Kevin Garnett is out. So, fingers crossed that we get 30 more minutes from Zach LaVine. He's at 4,200. The matchup really suits him. I like it a lot. I think that you can. It's risky in a cash game, but in a tournament, I love getting Levine out there. I think that Rick Rubio at 6,800, less than 7,000, he feels like he's almost a guarantee for 30 points. He's a good one to go up against Westbrook. And Shabazz Muhammad at 4,200 with Martin out, he'll be with some extra minutes available on the wing for him. He's averaging 30 minutes across his last five. He's not all that productive, only giving 22 points, but I think he feels like a really solid cash game play. In his last five, his lowest score is 18.6. And at 4,200, he's a nice cash game play. His upside's maybe not there for a tournament, but at a cheap cash option, you could do a lot worse than using Shabazz. Andrew Wiggins at 6,800. He's borderline for me, but I don't really think that I want to use him. And 8,000 for Karl Anthony Towns. It's appealing. He's been really good lately. 42 average across the last five, 47 across the last three. The Thunder do have an ability to shut down opposition centers. Steven Adams is back. He took Robin Lopez out of the game today. Not sure this is the greatest spot to use Towns. Onto the Thunder side of things, Russ Westbrook at 10,500. You feel like you're going to get 50 points from him all the time. This feels like another 50-point outing for him. And same goes for Kevin Durant at 10,200. You can feel pretty comfortable that they're going to get 50 points on most nights, or at least have a fair confidence that it might happen. Gorgui Dieng at 4,700 on the Timberwolves. Don't trust Sam Mitchell to do the right thing by him, so I'll leave him out of it. And Steve Adams, not 4,300. He's going to shut down Towns, but the Timberwolves have had an opportunity, or have been able to restrict opposition big men relatively well. So despite his 29 points today against the Knicks, not sure I'm going to get Steve Adams out there at 4,300. Serge Ibaka's at 5,800. That salary is pretty appealing. There is no Kevin Garnett for him to take on. He put up 39 today with those 17 rebounds in the overtime game in 47 minutes, but doesn't mean that I'm really going to run out and roster him in a DFS lineup. The Charlotte Hornets and the Utah Jazz, a lot depends on what happens with these wing guys in Charlotte with Jeremy Lamb and more specifically Nick Batum. If we assume that those guys are playing, there's not a massive amount of value for the wing guys. If Hawes is out, then I like Jeremy Lin a lot at 5,400. He put up 42 in the last game. He's a 30 average across his last three. You also have to consider Troy Daniels. He's strictly a tournament play at 4,100 though. And against this Jazz team, it's probably not a great matchup. Kemba Walker is at 9,200. He's averaging 52.7 across the last five games. There was a couple of monsters in there though, but he still put up 48.8 in his last one. The Jazz restrictions, they're more for wing players and big men than they are for point guards. So I'd feel relatively confident getting him out there at 9,200, but probably not. I'd much rather have Westbrook at 10,000 than have Kemba out there. If Batum plays, I don't think I'm going to use him. Spencer Hawes at 4,000, that feels like a great cheap center play. Yes, Gobert is going to have an impact, but at 4,000, as long as he gives you over 20 points, it's 5x value. I think he's a nice cash game play. Hal Neto has been ruled out for the Jazz, so Trey Burke is going to have to play some more point guard. He's at 4,700. He was dreadful in the last few games, but the extra role might spur him on. I'm not trusting him in cash games. I like Rudy Gobert at 7,200. He put up 42 in the last one. He's averaging 37 in the last five. He's worth a look to me. And for the Jazz, Rod Hood will get some extra ball handling at 5,600. He is always worth a look. And Gordy Haywood at 8,200. Probably a little bit off Haywood with Favors coming back. Not using Favors at this point. We don't know what his role is going to be. He played 20 minutes in his return. But at 8,200, that feels a little bit steep to use Gordo. The last game of the night, the Dallas Mavericks and the Golden State Warriors. This doesn't feel like it's going to be great for the Mavericks, to be honest. The Warriors are favored by 15.5. The total is 215. For the Warriors, Festus Ezeli is dealing with some knee issues. He's questionable. And Devin Harris is questionable for the Mavericks. And Zaza Pachulia is also questionable for the Mavericks. Harrison Barnes, at 4,500, he's been terrible. But at that salary, he's definitely appealing. Can he get 25 points? I think he's a chance to. I'm probably not going to use him, but I reckon that you could throw him in a tournament and maybe something clicks. Klay Thompson at 66. Yeah, he hasn't been getting it done lately. All in all, there's not much in this game, to be honest. 11,300 for Steph Curry is just too expensive. I know he's been able to get that sort of value. It really depends on who else you're putting around him, but it's really hard to construct a roster with a guy getting 11,000. With Zaza Pachulia questionable, if he's out, you might want to throw Salah Mejri in there again. He's at 3,900, and he does have a positive matchup against the Warriors, so he'd be a guy to consider. And Chandler Parsons is the other one who's been flying at the moment. 6,400, a 38 average across the last five, a positive matchup for him as well. The concern is that they get smashed and he plays limited minutes. So I'd probably limit a lot of these guys to just tournaments like Measury, and like Parsons and even Darren Williams. You throw him in at 5,900, that's a tournament. But even then, I don't even think I'd get him too involved in that case. Let's have a look at the picks of the day. At point guard, Archie Goodwin, 4,100, Ricky Rubio, 6,800, and Russ Westbrook, 10,500. Shooting guard, Zach LaVine, 42, J.R. Smith, 5,000, and there is no high-priced shooting guards that I like unless you want to take James Harden against the Spurs, which I do not. Shabazz Muhammad at 42 in small forwards, Bob Carver at 5,100, and Kawhi Leonard at 75. Power forwards, Tristan Thompson, 46, Ersan Ilyasova at 5,700, and Paul Millsap at 89. And the centers, Spencer Hawes, 4,000, Rudy Gobert, 7,200, and DeAndre Jordan, 7,800. We are done for today's podcast, guys. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at redrock_bball and basketballmonster at baskmonster, and checking out basketballmonster.com for all your daily fantasy and seasonal fantasy needs. Of course, there's always Hardwood Paroxysm to check out with all the tons of articles. Make sure you're going to SeatGeek and using that promo code REDROCK, one word, for your $20 rebate or $100 rebate off Super Bowl tickets. And just to show you can support the show, just download the app, use the promo code, you're done, show supported. That's a big way that you can say thank you to me if you like some of the content that I'm putting out. And hopefully if you've stayed through and listened to the end, you are actually enjoying what's coming out of the podcast. So if you could do that for me, it would be amazing. You can also follow me on Instagram and on Facebook. Subscribe on YouTube or on iTunes. Leave a review. Be a sponsor of the podcast. We are done. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.